We've been going through this series on the theory of creation, and we've been giving you the opportunity to participate by answering questions that we pose and by garnering your response allowing you or giving you the opportunity to ask some of your own questions. Today, we're not going to have a lot of audience interaction with regard to the questions, but I did want to go through one question that was raised this last time just to show or just to answer this. And it's a little difficult to read up on the screen, but if you've been following the question thread, you would have seen this from last week. I just copied it to the question for this week. It says, "Is this really a good hill to die on?" And whoever sent this question, I want to thank you for sending the question. It's a really good question, and I wanted to address this. But before I address it, I wanted to give you the opportunity to remind you, you are more than welcome to ask questions. We are going to address these questions in class as time permits. And we're going to answer this question here in just a minute. But during the course of the lesson today, if you have a question, you say, "Hey, what about this?" Please feel free to write it. And if we have time at the end of class, we'll go through it. If not, we'll address it in the following week. But feel free to ask any legitimate, non-sarcastic question, if that would be okay. So we've been talking about the theory of creation. We've been talking about evolution as well. And somebody wrote, "Is this really a good hill to die on?" To be honest, the question is maybe just a little bit vague. What is this? And so I'm going to make the assumption, if that's all right, that what we're talking about is the discussion that we've been having. And so I want to make two points so far. Number one, we haven't defined any hills yet to die on which to die. All that we've been doing is presenting information. And so number one, and this is part of our review questions, why is it that people can look at the same set of data and come to a different conclusion? And the answer is because people come to the set of data, right, with different preconceptions. And then we asked the question last week, is it a fair assessment to say that the theory of creation is religious while the theory of evolution is logical or scientific? Is that a fair preconception, as it were? And we talked about our example of the pilots loading a plane full of fuel, and they read it in pounds when it was really kilograms, and they only filled the plane half full because of an incorrect preconception. Right, so that is the direction we're going. We're going to finish that lesson today, but we have not defined any hills yet to die on. So if that's the case, then maybe the second reading of that question may be, is this important enough for us to discuss? Okay, isn't it just opinion? And maybe that's a fair interpretation of this question. And so if I can address that this way, my hope is that I would never come up here and take your time by giving you my opinion on something. All right? I'm just a person. I'm no better than anyone else in this room. I'm worse than many of you in this room. Okay? I struggle with things like we all struggle. My opinion does not matter. My hope is that whenever I get up here to speak with you, that it is from the Bible and not opinion. Okay? So this is a very good question. We will get to a point where we will define a hill, and you will make the decision yourself whether or not it's important enough for you to define a position or to die on that hill. But we're not doing that today. Okay, good question. If you wrote this question and you don't feel like it was answered, please let me know. ask it a different way, or come talk to me. Okay, in 1773, we're going to begin the second half of our lesson on science and religion. In 1773, British Parliament passed a series of taxes on the American colonies. Okay? They completed this task by imposing a tax on tea to the American colonies. This was something that infuriated the American colonies because they felt that they were being taxed without having a say, and that they were being governed without having a say in how they were governed. Okay? In 1773, they decided, you know what, we are going to voice our opinion to the British Parliament, and when the East India Trading Company comes and tries to deliver the tea in Boston, like they have in Charleston and in other places in the American colonies, we're going to repel them and we're going to say, turn back. The captain who came to Boston was not allowed to leave by the governor, or the mayor, if you will, of Boston, and he had to stay in the harbor, and eventually there were three ships that came. And the American colonists said, you know what, fine, we will voice our opinion in a different way. And one night, the exact number varies, several colonists, some dressed as Indians, some dressed in normal attire, boarded the ships, tossed the tea overboard, and began the road down to the American Revolution. All right, and we all know how the American Revolution ended. Right, we as Americans now have the ability to be self-governed. We have a say in how we are to be ruled. Question for you guys: what is this event, this historic event? What was it called? Somebody? Anybody? The Boston Tea Party. Very good. So this was the Boston Tea Party. Does anybody remember the slogan? What was the slogan that went around during this time? No taxation without representation, right? And God bless America. And we have a free country today because we threw the tea into the river. All right. 24 years later, in the year 1807, the United States has, I'm sorry, 24 years after the end of the American Revolution, 1783, the United States is less than a quarter of a century old, right? Or past the American Revolution. It's a free country. It's a country that is self-governed, self-ruled. For the most part, there's a demographic that is not allowed to be self-ruled, right? And these are women. And in 1807, the federal government clarified its position and said, we affirm that voting rights will not be extended to women. Okay? You say, why is the reason for this? Well, because the place of a woman in this point in time was to govern the house, right? Make sure that dinner was ready. Make sure that the groceries were provided for, make sure that the children were taken care of and brought up, make sure that the house stayed clean. And a woman, naturally, would not have enough time to understand politics, to study politics, and would then vote ignorantly or ill-informed, and thus cause great damage to the United States. That was the position. That is not my position, okay, just in case we're just want to be clear on that. Okay. As you can imagine, right, this was not a very popular position with one segment of the United States. And women began to unite and gather together and say, hey, we would like to have a vote. We want to be self-governed. And they began organizing the women's suffrage movement. And they would go and they would have parades, and they would lobby Congress, and they would lobby the states in order to have the ability to vote. And it was not until 1920 that Congress passed a law or passed an amendment to the Constitution allowing women to vote, the 19th Amendment. And it was not until 1969, the year that we put a man on the moon, that the last state ratified the 19th Amendment. Okay? So now women have a vote. Question. How is it that one set of people believe so strongly in self-rule that they will go to war, and as soon as that war is finished, deny the right of self-rule to a large segment of their constituency? How is that possible? And the answer is really simple. They had a double standard. They had a double standard. What's right for me maybe is not always right for you. I want what I want, and you can have whatever is left. Okay? They had a double standard. I want to talk to you today as we finish up our look at science and religion. If you remember last time, we talked about incorrect preconceptions. Today, we want to talk about double standards, and we're going to bring these two ideas together in the second half of this lesson. Okay, so before we get there, let's go over our review questions. We already answered the question, how is it that people can look at the same set of data and come to different conclusions? We said it's because of their preconceptions. What is the biblical Christian's foundational preconception? So if you believe the Bible, I just said it. If I am a Christian, right, my preconception is that the Bible is reliable. And the question that we keep asking every week is, what does my view of the Bible have on my view? What impact does my view of the Bible have on my view of God, on my view of origins, and on my view of everyday life? This is the crux of the matter. This question right here. We are not talking about origins specifically. We are not talking about opinions. We're not talking about nature and science. What we're talking about is, what do you believe about the Bible? That's why we're taking the time to go through this. All right? So, by way of review, what is science and what is religion? Does anybody remember this? And actually, we're going to be pressed a little bit for time, so I'll just go through these review questions very quickly. For remember, science is a systematic knowledge of the physical or material world gained through observation and experimentation. Right? So we're studying the physical, material world. Religion is a particular system of faith and worship. So when we read Genesis 1:1 and 31, we read, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God saw, verse 31, God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So, question, what makes the theory of creation a religious idea rather than a scientific idea? And I'll stop here and let you guys answer this. What makes the theory of creation a religious rather than a scientific idea? Anybody? Okay, so one person may say you cannot observe creation. All right, what else? What makes this, the theory of creation, a religious rather than a scientific notion or idea? Okay, so we acknowledge God in the theory of creation, right? And we've never seen God. We can't observe God. We can't feel. We can't measure God. He's not scientific, if you will. He's not physical. He's not material. We can't experiment on him. We can't observe him. All right? So he is not scientific. This is a religious notion. If God is real, show him to me. You guys with me? All right. Let's keep going. Is there anything in the theory of evolution that requires faith? Is there anything that cannot be explained or observed by science and just has to be believed? All right, if you remember the last time that we looked at an article, a lengthy article, we're going to look at it again. We're going to look at it in a different way this time, that explains the origins of the universe with regard to the Big Bang Theory. All right, and we'll just read through it. And this is the URL where you can find this. I appreciate your patience as we read through this. And what I want you to do is I want you to notice the highlighted words. And then I want you to answer this question when we're done. Is there anything in the theory of evolution that requires faith? The most popular theory of our universe's origin centers on a cosmic cataclysm unmatched in all of history, the Big Bang. This theory was born of the observation that other galaxies are moving away from our own at great speed in all directions, as if they had all been propelled by an ancient explosive force. Before the Big Bang, scientists believe the entire vastness of the observable universe, including all of its matter and radiation, was compressed into a hot, dense mass just a few millimeters across. This nearly incomprehensible state is theorized to have existed for just a fraction of the first second of time. Big Bang proponents suggest that some 10 billion to 20 billion years ago, a massive blast allowed all the universe's known matter and energy, even space and time themselves, to spring from some ancient and unknown type of energy. The theory maintains that in the instant, literally a trillion trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, the universe expanded with incomprehensible speed from its pebble-sized origin to astronomical scope. Expansion has apparently continued, but much more slowly over the ensuing billions of years. Scientists can't be sure exactly how the universe evolved after the Big Bang. Many believe that as time passed and matter cooled, more diverse kinds of atoms began to form, and they eventually condensed into the stars and galaxies of our present universe. This is taken off the website National Geographic, Origins of the Universe and Expanding World. Question. Based on what we just read and the highlighted word, is there anything in the theory of evolution that requires belief? Faith. Belief in something that cannot be observed. Belief in something that cannot be measured. Belief in something that is inexplicable. Is there anything in the theory of evolution that requires faith? I see some of you nodding your heads. Rachel, what is it? Okay, so number one, it's a theory. Okay, but what is it in this theory that requires belief in something that is not comprehensible, something that is not visible, observable, measurable? Okay. Okay, so no one has observed evolution. Let's keep it coming. Based on what we just read, what is not observable? Specifically, what's not observable? Sam? Yeah. This energy, right, that's supposed to be a few millimeters big. You can't even see it from where you're sitting, right? But somehow this holds or held everything that we see today. It's incomprehensible, is what the article tells us. And it just happened. Faster than I can snap my fingers, the universe is here. That's how fast the universe came into being. It just exploded, and everything was in this little piece of mass. All the matter in the known universe. Right? The very origin of the Big Bang, the very foundation of the theory, is a speculation and requires faith to believe. Now, I'm not trying to be a hater, okay? I'm not trying to say, see, I'm a creationist, which I am. I'm a creationist, so I'm showing you what's wrong with evolution. That is not what we're here to do. That is not my intent. If I do that, I'm not worthy of being up here. I am trying to lay out the facts for you. I acknowledge that creationists require faith. We require belief in a God that we have never seen. We require faith in a book that tells us about this God, written by people we have never met. We require faith. All that I am saying is, it appears that the theory of evolution also requires faith. Okay? What's the point, Elias? The point is this. Is the theory of evolution a scientific or religious belief system? Is the theory of evolution a scientific or religious belief system? I'll answer the question this way. If the system requires a person to hold on to the theory out of faith, it has to be classified as a religious belief. If the system requires a person to hold on to the theory out of faith, it has to be classified as a religious belief. If I approach you and you say, I believe in the theory of evolution, this is scientific, and I say, how do you explain the Big Bang? And you say, I don't know, but I believe it. Is that not the same response that I give you if you say, explain to me how God created the universe, and I say, I don't know, but I believe it? In fact, let's go through this. Let's skip over this question for just a second. Okay? We already answered the question, does the theory of evolution require faith? We said yes. Let's go through this exercise. There may be some here who say, Elias, I'm a little bit skeptical. I don't know that I quite believe or I quite follow what you are saying. So what I want to do is I want to ask you some questions then. Okay? Number one. Which one of these views requires belief in something / someone who's never been seen or that has never been seen? Which one of these views requires belief in something or someone that has never been seen? How many of you say creation requires belief in something or someone that has never been seen? Okay, obviously. How many of you say evolution requires belief in something or someone that has never been seen? If you're going to be intellectually honest, you have to say that this is the case. Evolution requires belief in something or someone that has never been seen. Number two, which belief requires faith or belief in something or someone that is inexplicable? Which one of these theories requires belief in something or someone that is inexplicable? Evolution or creation? How many of you say creation definitely? Okay? How many of you say evolution requires belief in something that is inexplicable or can't be seen? Both of these do. Here's a good one. Which one of these theories has evidence in nature? Which one of these theories has evidence in nature? Does evolution have evidence in nature? Absolutely. Absolutely it does. Right? Absolutely it does. Does creation have evidence in nature? Well, yeah. I mean, you don't look at a tree, you don't look at yourself and say, this came together by chance. That's not a normal way to think. I don't look at this building and say, wow, isn't it amazing? This just happened over a million years and it just, the lights just appeared, right? They just grew out of this. You don't say that. There's a designer. Whether or not you acknowledge that or not, the evidence is there. Both of these have evidence in nature. Okay? Which Origen's view is logical? Which Origen's view is logical? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. If I were not a Christian, evolution makes sense to me. Evolution makes sense to me. When you look at DNA on a surface view, when you look at DNA and realize, wow, you know, we're 95% close to this species and we're 90-something percent close to this species, it makes sense that living beings evolved over time. It makes sense until you dive into it. I'm not going to get into that right now. Is creation a logical theory? And again, you're going to have to answer this for yourself, but it makes sense that there is a designer somewhere. It makes sense when you look at how far we are from the sun, that if we go a little bit this way or we go a little bit that way, we cannot support life. It makes sense that when you look at how a child is born and how they're carried by their mother, it's an absolute miracle that we even exist today. It's an absolute miracle. Okay? Both views are logical. Which Origen's view is religious? This one's kind of easy for the creationist because we have our information in the Bible. We say, yes, this is religious. And if you are intellectually honest, okay, and I want to be very clear of how I say this, and you realize that faith is required in the theory of evolution, then what you have to admit is that it is a systematic belief system. And it in itself is religion. Say, Elias, I don't know. How can both views require faith and only one be religious? The answer is really simple. People choose to have a double standard based on their preconception that there is no God. Elias, is this rejection, is this handled or is this addressed in Scripture? If we would today, turn to Romans chapter 1. We're going to read verses 18 through 25. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. And I want to leave you with this, because it is a view into the future based on what Paul saw in the past. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. God is angry. Why? Because that which is known about God is evident within man or them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Therefore, God gave them over in the lust of their heart to impurity, so that their bodies will be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. All right, question. What does verse 20 tell us about God and the origins of the universe? What does verse 20 tell us about God and the origins of the universe? Somebody help me out here. Somebody who hasn't answered a question yet. What does verse 20 tell us about God and the origins of the universe? Okay, that God left us evidence of himself in creation. God is not trying to hide. And he gave us the faculties, the wherewithal, to be able to look around and to say, there has to be a designer. There has to be something greater than I am who did all of this. That is what Romans 1, verse 20 tells us. Okay, question number two. Why is it that people deny the existence of God? According to verse 21, why is it that people deny the existence of God? Why is it that people look around and they say, no designer, there's no God. My presupposition, my preconception is that there is no God. Why? Verse 21. Anybody? Let's read verse 21 together. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. What does that sound like? What does that sound like? Is this something deliberate? Is this an act of will? Is this a choice? According to Romans chapter 1, people choose not to respect God or acknowledge him. That's their choice. So even though they see all of this, they choose not to acknowledge God. So what then are these people who choose not to acknowledge the evidence that's so plainly in front of them, according to the Bible, not according to Elias, what are they left with? Okay, or if you're grammatically correct, with what are they left? What are they left with? What happens to these people? Okay, they become fools according to the Bible. What happens when you deny the truth? They're left with foolishness. What else? One more time. They're left with them. That's the most important. That's the critical part that we're trying to get to today. Here are some other things they're left with. They deny God and call it wisdom, right? They exchange the truth for a lie. They choose to worship the creation rather than the Creator. And they defile the image of God on earth. Did you catch that? Did you see that in the passage when it says that God has left them to do what they want with their bodies? We are the image of God on earth. They defile the image of God on earth. Okay? This is what people who choose not to believe in God, this is all they're left with. Because we will worship something. A person who denies God if I can put it this way. If I have the Bible on one level, on one plane, where do I put myself on that plane? If the Bible says there's a God, He created the universe, there's sin and it has to be paid for, and I choose to say there is no God, I don't believe this, I have passed judgment on the Bible. I do not acknowledge it. So in the place of God, I put myself. Do you guys see that? I have more truth than the Bible. I am more reliable than the Bible. My mental faculties are more trustworthy than what the Bible has to say. I become my own God. I believe in rationale. I believe in logic. I believe in science. That is my belief system. Guys, that's a religion. Whether you meet every Sunday or not, this is a religion. So the question then is this. If both sides evolution and creation are both religious belief systems, why is it then that one is termed religious and one is termed logic? Why is it that one is the stuff of faith and the other is the stuff of observation if they both require faith? And I will propose to you that it is because of their preconceptions that they have a double standard. There is a double standard. Moving on beyond that, because our focus is not going to be on evolution moving forward. This will probably be the last time that we talk about it. I'm talking to believers here for the most part. All of you said you believe the Bible. All of you said you believe that God exists. Okay. So then you have to believe some form of creation, whether it's six-day creation, young earth would be what it would be called, or you believe the God created the earth, but it took longer, old earth, okay? Or you believe that God used evolution, evolutionary creationism, or theistic evolution, okay? Or somewhere in between there. Is what you have to come up with, okay? What does this tell us about the conversation that we're about to have? These views are not, they don't range from religious to scientific. These are religious conversations that we're having here. These are belief system conversations that we're having here. Okay? This is why we can approach this from a matter of logic and reason rather than having to go look at the facts, if you will. All right? So let's wrap up. I want to be sure that we approach this topic with correct assumptions. And the correct assumption is this: that this discussion is a discussion about worldviews. It's a discussion about religious beliefs. That we will not have a double standard when it comes to the points that we make. That really what we're talking about is a discussion about religious belief systems. Now, some of you may have questions. I invite you to ask those questions. If you say, Elias, I really struggle with what you're saying, can you please let me know? I have a question about this. This doesn't make sense. Please ask me. Please come find me after class. Please send me a message on Facebook. Put a message here. I have no clue who wrote this message. Okay? What we want to talk about is not Elias being right, you being right. What we want to talk about is, what does the Bible say, and how strongly am I going to hold to this Bible? How strongly am I going to hold to the faith that God has given to me? Let's pray.